Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
It is Dukes and Bell, guys. We're counting down to Saturday night. Dogs in Notre Dame. The Fighting Irish making their way to Athens. We're going to talk to our man David Pollock coming up. Hey, quick reminder, Atlanta United supporters, as we came out of our Five Stripes preview last hour, just a reminder that you can join 92.9 The Game today starting at 7 at Mojitos, located in Peachtree Corners for the Atlanta United, FC Cincinnati.
Big Cougar Bar, big Cougar Bar, man.
Mojitos?
That's what I heard, man.
They bring Cougars in?
Yeah, man, live Cougars. I don't want to meet you. Hey, man, lots of fun. It's going to be a great weekend. As we said, we'll be out at Grindhouse, guys, on Friday all day. I believe Brad Nassar is going to stop by. He'll have the call with Gary Danielson on CBS. It's going to be a wicked weekend, man, when they prank up the music. Saturday night's all right for a fight. It's going to be blasted out. And, of course, College Game Day, including our next guest, will be there. It is the three-time All-American, David Pollock, here on the WadeFord.com hotline. What's up, Dave?
What up, homie G? How we doing?
Hey, man. Oh, you're big time now, man. I'm just watching your world, cowboy. Just watching every Saturday morning and watching.
Hey, man, what, you screaming or something, bro? Why are you so hoarse, man?
Uh-oh. Here we go.
All right, again, it's a total fastball just teed up for you. Because I've got to lose some weight, Dave. Yes, my voice has been jacked up. I've got a hiatal hernia. My stomach is not where it's supposed to be. So go ahead and make jokes.
Well, no, I'm sorry. I'm actually sorry I asked now, because that's just information I didn't really want to know. But, hey, that's good.
Yeah, if you were here right now, you could give me the Heineken maneuver and maybe put the stomach where it's supposed to be. Anyway, man, there's a lot of hype about this. We are having a hard time not coming up with the scenarios where Georgia doesn't beat Notre Dame pretty thoroughly. Give me a reason why Notre Dame will beat Georgia.
I mean, I think you could say Ian Book. Like, he's a guy that, at the quarterback spot, could give Georgia fits. I think Georgia's defense is one of the most improved aspects of this team this year. I think it's the reason. Like, you look at the sacks, they got 12 and 24 all last year. You know, they're, I mean, three games in, they're already halfway to what their production was. So I think Ian Book's scrambling, Ian Book running, he's a running quarterback. He's not like a blazer by any stretch of the imagination, but he is a guy that can get first downs and scramble around and throw the ball down the field. Notre Dame's also a team that doesn't beat themselves. I mean, they don't make a lot of mistakes. They don't get a lot of penalties. They're not at a spot very often. They're not the most, by any stretch of the imagination, they're not the most athletic team in the country, but they play really well together. That's my case to try to make you feel like Notre Dame can beat Georgia.
David Pollock joining us.
Not convinced. Not convinced.
Pollock, let me ask you this, though. You know, is this kind of the MO of Notre Dame? Clemson had him up, you know, 20-0 at half, and they go on and beat them last year in the college football playoff. Bama beats them in the 2013 BCS championship, 42-14, beat down. They're 5-13 in bowls since 1993, and they've lost all those big major bowl games since then. So when you put them in these big situations, they kind of fold up. Isn't that who they are?
Notre Dame's 1-18 versus top five opponents since 1999. Only three of the losses, by the way, have been by 10 points or fewer.
Wow.
So if you want to put it historically in context, the numbers are the numbers. Yeah, and they haven't lived up to it in big games. And so this is a big spot for Notre Dame. This is a lot to prove. Listen, if you don't think Notre Dame players think this game matters, they were talking about this game weeks ago, and they're talking about this game being enormous. Georgia players are next game on the schedule, blah, blah, blah. Notre Dame saw all the tweets last year when Clemson put them on their shoe and was curb stomping them in the playoffs. Georgia players were popping off and tweeting about, hey, I guess maybe Notre Dame deserves to be in there more than us. And right, if you don't think that'll try to give them more fuel to the fire. No, I mean, you can't defend that, bro. I can't sit there and go, no, Notre Dame's lived up to the hype. They haven't. They've been average for a number of years, and they haven't stepped up and made it beyond that. I mean, you remember 2012 when they played Bama in the title game? It was, God, that was ugly. And then last year in the semifinal, it was ugly. But in fairness, Alabama also got curb stomped by Clemson. So Clemson was just better than everybody.
Yeah, 2012 was funny. Alabama even beat him in the girlfriend department. McCarron had the hot girlfriend, and Manti Te'o had a make-believe girlfriend. It's David Pollack with us here, guys, on the WadeFor.com hotline talking about the big game. Just real quick, because we want to bounce around the rest of college football. But, Dave, you played at Georgia. You've seen, you know, Mark Richt's teams and now Kirby. Has he finally built a team that is up there with Alabama, the size on offensive line and the depth, and also the playmakers and freshmen all over the place?
Oh, it's unbelievable. I mean, it's night and day. This unit and what he took over and what he's taken it to be is night and day. I mean, it's unbelievable. There's more five-star linemen. Just on the offensive line, there's more five-star O-linemen than Coach Rick ever signed. I mean, that's how great he's done at recruiting. And, you know, it doesn't take a rocket scientist to figure that out. Kirby's upgraded this roster, and the mentality's different. I mean, you can just see there's some nastiness. You look at Cade Mays on the offensive line, and big Ben Cleveland, and there's just a sense of toughness and that was missing for a while. And so, you know, I mean, Georgia's not going anywhere. I tell people all the time when I go speak in Georgia, like, enjoy it. This is going to be the best run probably in Georgia football history over the next 10 years. And it's been an unbelievable building and recruiting. And just if you don't believe me about that, just look at other programs like Washington, who's now got a starting five-star quarterback, Jacob Eason, who transferred from here. Justin Fields, five-star quarterback who transferred from here. I mean, you know, even the kids Kirby signed that have transferred are going on and having success. So the eye for talent and recruiting and discipline and building a championship program, Kirby's definitely got it.
But you're a defensive dude. What do you think about the defense? I mean, listen, when they played Notre Dame in 17, it was Roquan and Bellamy, and there were brand names on that defense that ultimately lived up to the expectation of what Kirby asked them to do, and then that team goes and plays for a championship. What about this defense?
This defense is better than any defense Kirby's had by far. And I think it's going to lack a little star power. You don't have DeAndre Baker from a year ago, you know, obviously the best defensive back in the country winning the Thorpe Award. You don't have Roquan Smith winning the Buckus Award as the best linebacker. But what you have is four corners that could start at most places in college football. You have three safeties that are playing elite level that haven't missed a tackle this season. You got 10 defensive linemen that you can rotate in and out. You got some young pups. I'm just telling you, bro, you turn on the tape and you watch. Go watch number 4 for Georgia. That's an adult. He is an adult. I mean, he is a true freshman. His name's Nolan Smith. He's a true freshman that is quick and fast and all that stuff. But I'm just telling you, he's stoning people with his hands right now. I saw him bull rush 2 weeks in a row, bull rush offensive tackles, and literally he hit them so hard that they fell backwards straight on the back of their head. I mean, he is a superstar. Walker on the inside. By the way, dude, 6'6", 290. Go peep out number 44 on kickoff team. Yes, I said that right. He's on the kickoff team. Like, wow. They got some young studs. I think the quality of depth that they have, there's no weak. Jordan Davis of the nose tackle is really good. There is no weakness on this defense. Well, inside linebacker is a little bit more of a question mark that maybe Dean answers down the road as a true freshman that makes you a little bit better. But defensive line is really stout. Outside linebackers have a chance to be really special. Cornerbacks and safeties are super, super good. A couple years ago when Georgia played for a national title, they had guys that were smart and in the right position but weren't really great athletes. Now you don't have those guys on the field anymore. Now you got guys that are phenomenal athletes that are also in the right spot.
And now just a matter of dotting the I, crossing the T, and getting the natty. It's David Pollack with us here on the WadeFor.com hotline out in Athens, and we'll be out there, guys, at Grindhouse on Friday all day long. Dave, let's move it around the SEC. LSU finally got the offense that people have been clamoring for. It looks like the LSU team that actually can beat in Alabama.
Yeah, for the first time in a long time. I mean, every time we try to watch LSU out Bama, we know what the end of the movie is. We've seen the credits. We've seen it roll. We've seen it 4,000 times, and you know they're not going to win. Yeah, different style. How about this, guys? What's going to win the SEC? Is it going to be the Big 12 or the SEC? And I say that because if you're watching Alabama and LSU, they're throwing the ball 30 times a game. They have very limited run game. They're just going to throw it all over the yard. Georgia looks like an SEC team from the past. The old school hits you in the mouth, going to pound you, going to play action. Like, which style is going to win out is fascinating to me. LSU and Joe Burrow, good Lord. They are, you know, it's interesting to watch their offense and how much different it is in the past, but they're unique to college football because they got a coordinator that comes in now. He's not technically the coordinator, but he is. Joe Brady from the Saints, and he's not just living. Most offenses in college football are, you know, it's like basketball. It's like the Warriors. It's threes or dunks. You know, it's the quick game or it's the deep shots. Well, he's living on the intermediate passing game and really feasting on people that direction. So does that continue, and does Joe Burrow continue to have sex? And two, by the way, Alabama's not running the football at all. They're having very little success pushing people around and getting the power running game going, which is so surprising to see. But Tua's so special. His three wide receivers are just freak shows that are three of the best at their positions in the country. And so it's going to be fun to watch those teams and battle out. But LSU definitely 100% has a shot.
It's David Pollack, guys, ESPN college football analyst. You watch him. You see him on game day. They'll be in Athens. You buying Michigan, bro? I watch them and I go, I just don't see it with what Harbaugh's trying to do. Now, maybe, you know, everybody says, well, he doesn't have the right personnel. I'm like, what are you talking about? This is the quarterback he wanted. This is the system. Now, I know they just changed systems. They're trying to do more RPO stuff. But, David, what do you see with Michigan in the Big Ten?
Michigan is the same boat as what we've talked about with Notre Dame. There's a lot of talk about them in big games. And there's a lot of not delivering. I mean, they have consistently not delivered. And listen, there is no more excuses for Harbaugh. Like, it's just, these are all his guys. And by the way, the reason Michigan's success has been so good the last several years has nothing to do with Harbaugh's offense. It has everything to do with Don Brown and their defense.
Right.
And Harbaugh was hired to be because he's an offensive innovator and he's an offensive, you know, genius. And his offenses have been very average. And by the way, this isn't going to change. Their offensive line, they don't knock people off the football. It's going to be hard to establish the run game, the power run game, because they don't have guys that are moving people off the ball in that way. Shea Patterson is – I got crucified week zero when I talked about Shea Patterson by Michigan fans. I mean, they just absolutely murdered me. I said, what has Shea Patterson ever done to give you the belief that he can take his team to a college football playoff? He doesn't show me – he doesn't know how to play the quarterback spot yet. Can he learn? Sure, but it's getting a little late now, and his eyes come straight – by the way, his eyes come straight down as soon as pressure comes. He doesn't go through his reads and step up in the pocket and make strikes. Like, he's got to continue to evolve. And now you play Jonathan Taylor in Wisconsin. I think it's going to be more of the same next week when we're talking about this, because I think Wisconsin's going to win the game.
Yeah, Michigan goes to Camp Randall, guys. And Dave, and College Game Day will be in Athens this weekend for the Irish and Notre Dame. Dave, speaking of the Big Ten, obviously Justin Fields just looks like he fits perfectly. Is Ryan Day going to be like Lincoln Riley and they're going to beat Michigan?
Yes. Yes, right now, what I'm seeing, I absolutely would lean that direction. I mean, it's early in the season, but I don't know defensively when I watch Ohio State, man, they got some dudes. I was sitting there the other day, I was going through the film, and I wanted to watch some Chase Young, and he's number two of their, you know, defensive end, outside linebacker type guy. He'll probably be the number one, number two pick in the draft next year. Absolute freak show. And then I'm like, who the heck is this cat on the other side, number 11? Like, he came in the game like seven plays later, and I look him up, and he's true sophomore, 6'4", 270 from Cleveland, Ohio. I'm like, is that Chase Young or is that Chase Young? And I'm just, I'm like, where's this garbage? Like, where are they finding these guys? It's unbelievable the level their defensive line and secondary guys, they just pumped out at a crazy level. Who is going to beat Ohio State in the Big Ten right now when you look at the offenses in the Big Ten? Michigan State, they haven't been able to score in 25 years. I mean, their last five Power Five games, they have three touchdowns, by the way. Three. When you look at Penn State, severely missing Moorhead as an offensive coordinator and Trace McSorley at the quarterback spot, they look very pedestrian at that spot. Michigan, you look at them at the offensive spot. Okay, Jonathan Taylor in Wisconsin, are they the team that can rival them? But, man, it looks like Ohio State's in a good position with a really good defense and a pretty good offense that – Who's gonna score points on that defense consistently and beat them?
Pollack, have you ever seen the disparity we're seeing with Clemson and the ACC and everybody else? I mean, no one even comes close. I think Virginia's a good football team. They're not beating Clemson. They went up to Syracuse. They handled business. Florida State's a joke right now. There's a huge disparity to where Clemson is and everyone else in that conference.
There is no easier path to the college football playoff history than what Clemson's about to do. I mean, thank God they challenged themselves like a little bit out of conference with picking up Texas A&M. I mean, it's bad. I mean, you look at the ACC just last week. By the way, I don't know if y'all talked about this. How does Georgia Tech lose to the Citadel? You ran the triple option for years and years and years. Like, surely you can beat a triple option team. No! Like, for that. Like, that just, I literally pointed that. I'm like, what on earth is that garbage? Furman's beaten Virginia Tech at the half. Pittsburgh loses to Penn State. Mm-hmm. NC State gets curb stomped by West Virginia, who hadn't had a 10-yard run all season long, and they run all over them. I mean, it was a bad week. You know, you see North Carolina lose to Wake. I mean, there's nothing on Clemson's schedule that remotely is going to get you excited. It's going to be literally a cakewalk to the college football playoff, the easiest path by far. The interesting thing, I guess, would be if they were to somehow find a way to stumble to nobody is if they'd still get in, because it's still unthinking. It's bad.
Well, brother, we're so proud of you, man. Again, working with you back in the day, and you were a big star. Can't wait to see the vibe and the atmosphere. It's going to be bananas on Saturday. And don't be a stranger, man. Let's pick your brain some more, man.
No problemo, guys. Just text me. Hit me up, brother.
Pollock! Good stuff, baby. We'll talk to you Saturday. That's David Pollock, guys. Hey, our dog report brought to you by Cool Ray.
Cool Ray, guys, the biggest no-brainer of all time. It is a lifetime parts and labor warranty. Trust the pros at Cool Ray and Carrier.
Find out what our tight end has to say for our Atlanta Falcons next on Dukes and Bell. We're waiting our man Austin Hooper to call in, and we'll grab him, talk about Indianapolis, talk about that incredible win last Sunday. But you got to fast forward. Falcons on the field today, game planning and getting ready for Indianapolis. Reminder, guys, the Rock and Jock Celebrity Bowling Tournament is going on. It's Wednesday, September 25th, 4 to 7 p.m. Go register on the website, then decide who you want to play for, who you want to rep, and that's first thing. But you're going to have celebrities like Brian Jordan, Marquise Grissom, Muhammad Massaqua, Ronnie Brown, Jason Campbell, many more are going to be out there hanging out with us. It's a two-game bowling tournament with trophies and prizes, plus there will be a post-tournament Atlanta United viewing party to cheer on the Five Stripes. So for more information, go to our webpage, the events page at 929thegame.com. If you just missed it, David Pollock joined us from ESPN College Football Game Day, and analyst talking about Notre Dame. And I just think it's important. You know, we talk about the dogs, at least some of us talk about the dogs in this way, that the dogs have been unable to get over the hump against Alabama, right? And some people think that's kind of just what it is and that's the way it is. And for Notre Dame, their thing is, in these big games, Mike, they don't show up. And I'm not saying that they lose, you know, get blown out. They have, but Pollock gave you the numbers, and I threw out the numbers out there, 5-13 in bowls since 1993. And then you get to the since 1999 number, which he talked about in these big games, these games that matter, national
ranked opponents.
They've won once. One time.
Yeah, so that's the thing about the schedule. We respect the schedule. Look, they'll take on anybody. It's not Notre Dame's fault that USC and Stanford are on hard times. But certainly, you know, the just-the-tip schedule that they've adopted, with the ACC. You know, they're playing a weak ACC right now, which it is. And again, Clemson gets through it, and Clemson's going to keep on rolling. Clemson had their hardest opponent, and that, of course, was beating Texas A&M. I mean, they can, you know, I know Dabo's not going to say we're going to take a foot off the gas, but let's be honest. They can. You know, they got to just prepare themselves for, you know, what's going to come down the road. The point I'm getting to is about Notre Dame. These guys, yes, they're going to be upset. They're going to be all about the bulletin board material. Georgia guys were being all, you know, snarky during the bowl game. And Georgia players have no right to say a word, because you laid a big turd down there on the Sugar Bowl and you lose to your best opponents, the toughest teams you played, and you lose. You don't get to play in the Final Four, guys. We talked about this, you know, all through the month of December last year. You know, you lose to LSU and Alabama. That's not a resume builder, guys. But regardless, Notre Dame can be all the ticked off they want. They can't go toe-to-toe with Georgia. And we're not trying to be homers. I think Pollock laid it out for you. The firepower, the size, all the things that you've wanted. And again, Carl, you touched on it. The rest of the country will say Georgia can't finish. Georgia can't close. Well, I think if Georgia puts a big number on Notre Dame, I think a lot of people will take notice of this team, which they should be already.
If you have the opportunity, do you just put more points on the board?
I mean,
let's say Georgia's up 30-14 in the fourth quarter with a few minutes to play, and you've got a chance to score. Do you go score?
Belichick take the foot off the gas against the Dolphins and his coach Flores? No.
And the reason why I say that is I know that they're going to tell us, and I'm talking about the playoff football committee, and, you know, who's our guy that we talked to?
A big Bill Hancock, big the director Bill. Of the college football playoff committee.
Yeah, I mean, I know they're going to tell us that doesn't matter anymore, but you still have humans in that room. And
style point.
Absolutely. To tell me, it's one thing, oh, they beat Notre Dame soundly. Yes, it was a home game. Notre Dame comes in ranked seventh. The Dogs are ranked third. But if you have another chance to continue to score points, I think you do it.
Now, let's flip the script. Georgia loses this game. You're dead in the water.
Stop it.
I mean, we've told the folks, at least for the first three days this
still,
week.
You can still be in the SEC championship.
That's going to hurt your style. Huh? It's going to hurt your style.
You can be in the SEC championship. Don't count the dogs out.
I don't see Ohio State losing this year. I don't see Oklahoma losing this year. No offense to your Texas Longhorns.
You thought you were going to get away with that. Here's the issue if in fact, the Dogs do lose Saturday. Not only do you have to run the table, if you were to run the table, here's my theory on this, Mike. If you run the table and you lose in the SEC championship game, and let's say it's Alabama again, okay, just for whatever.
Right.
I think a one-loss dog team losing in the championship game of their conference championship can still get in. But a dog team that has lost to Notre Dame and then loses to Alabama or LSU or whoever, you're not getting in. So the one-loss thing is still at play only if you run the table and get to the championship game. You can't have one loss and then get there and lose again.
And by the way, I looked it up right now. There's not a ranked opponent on Clemson's remaining schedule.
It's
a shame that the ACC has become what it is now, but a lot of that is because, you know, Virginia Tech has not lived up to their end of the bargain, nor has Miami right now, or Florida State for that matter. But, you know, Clemson reminds me a lot of when Florida State, Carl, had Bobby Bowden. They were winning those 11 games every year and finishing top five. You know, the ACC wasn't this bad, but it was close.
More on this coming up, guys. It is Dukes and Bell, and joining us right now is our man Austin Hooper.
Pro Bowler.
What's going on?
You got to say Pro Bowler when you put him
on. Oh, my bad. Pro Bowler, Austin Hooper. What's going on, man?
What's up? How you boys doing?
Man, we're good.
California cool.
We're feeling good because you guys are doing the damn thing. I mean, that was a spectacular win, right? I mean, it felt good. We saw you guys dancing and doing all kind of craziness in the locker room afterwards. You got to celebrate your victories. That was a special one, wasn't it?
Yeah, I mean, it always feels good to win. I mean, it's really difficult to win in this league. So, I mean, you got to take the good with the bad, and when the good comes, you definitely got to enjoy it. I mean, you know, that's what training camp's for. That's what OTAs are for, all that, for those, you know, 15, 20 minutes together in that locker room, that feeling of victory with everyone, you know, jumping around, having fun, like feeling that true sense of the word brotherhood. I mean, it's a unique feeling that not a lot of people get to experience, but I mean, that's probably one of my favorite aspects of the game, those 15, 20 minutes post-game after a victory.
Yeah, I don't know if it translates to you guys, and we think it does, Hoop, but as guys that, you know, as fans, and to see the thing we've had with Philadelphia, where they've kind of been in our way, and they kept this out of, you know, advancing in the playoffs 2 years ago, this just seemed like it was one of the more physical games we've seen the Falcons playing. Was it the most physical games you played in your NFL career?
This past one?
Yeah.
No, I mean, I probably thought the season opener last year against them was probably the most physical game I've ever played in, but I mean, it still was very physical, don't get me wrong. I mean, you know, these are two teams that, you know each other's personnel offensively, defensively, and special teams-wise. I mean, shoot, this was my third, fourth time playing those guys.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I had a pretty good feel for how those ends played and what they wanted to do, and you know, the way how, you know, Malcolm Jenkins is used in the back end, and he's kind of like, he was kind of like the tell for their secondary, just seeing where he lines up and taking a look at the rotation will kind of tell you the story of their defense. So, I mean, the familiarity going around my fourth time, I mean, it's always physical when you play those guys. But, I mean, I just felt like, you know, it was almost like my fourth time playing them. I understood what was going to happen before it happened.
Tight end Austin Hooper joining us here on Dukes and Bell. Guys, Falcons getting ready for Indianapolis, turning the page and starting the game plan for Sunday's matchup on the road. Here on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. Do you hear the hoop holler? Do you hear all that? Can you hear that, or it's just noise?
Oh, for sure. I mean, when thousands of people screaming all at once, I mean, yeah, it's pretty cool. It's pretty cool. I definitely hear it when I'm out there. I mean, when I first, I've said it before, I mean, when I first got the chance, I thought they were booing me. I was like, what the hell? Like, I just got a first down. What's up, guys?
Ooh!
Like, and then I realized that one or two were like, oh, did you hear that? I'm like, what? Are they booing? They're like, no, bro, they're saying hoop. I was like, Oh, that makes so much more sense. That's awesome.
We talked about you and the extra work with Matt Ryan before last season, and it results in a Pro Bowl. I mean, you got like a jugs machine in your backyard, like foom, 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 just working on it all the offseason?
I mean, I just hit it before practice every day. But, I mean, offseason, I'll just meet up with Matt. So, I mean, he spends a lot of time in SoCal, so I'll drive down from the Bay Area and meet him down there for a couple weeks or however long. You know, he needs me. I mean, my brother was down there, so I got to spend time with my brother and, you know, a bunch of college friends and whatnot, you know, and family all across the West Coast. So it was cool to spend all that extra time with him and get that true one-on-one, because, I mean, once he gets back and into the grind, it's like, all right, Calvin, let's work on this. Muhammad, let's work on this. Julio, let's work on this. Russell Gage, let's do this. Free, you know, et cetera, et cetera. So it was cool to slow things down and get a lot of rest with him, because, I mean, when practice starts, I go with the O-line, because, I mean, where we live in the fantasy football generation now, but make no mistake, your job's the tight end is the block, first and foremost.
Hoop, are you concerned about the run game? And I only say that because I thought the offensive line, you guys, did an amazing job protecting Matt. I mean, drop back 43 times, get sacked once against that Eagles pressure, they were bringing it, but the run game doesn't seem like it's quite hit its stride. And I know we're two games in. What do you make of that? How much talk in the offensive rooms is that, you know, part of the process as far as this week? Or is it just something that you're fine with where we're at and it'll continue to get better?
Yeah, I mean, I don't think it should be time for anyone to say the sky is falling or anything like that. But, I mean, it's just one of those things, you know, like, I mean, I had that one play. I've had a play, you know, other people have had a play where, you know, 10 people block you to perfection, then one person doesn't have, you know, great play, loses leverage, et cetera. It happened to me in the game, having other guys on the team. So, I mean, I would say, you know, us whole schematically is just bad. You know, it's just this, you know, the old story of just, you know, everyone taking turns messing up on one play. I mean, it's tough, but we got to be better. I got to be better. We all can raise it to another level, because you saw it was either boom or bust runs. It was either runs over 7 yards or they were TFLs. So, I mean, you know, none of our plays are designed for someone to run scot-free up the field to hit Devontae as soon as the ball touches his hand. So, I mean,
right.
It's just one of those things we just got to, you know, tighten up on, I mean, versus certain looks and blitzes. Just, you know, it's just we're just playing together, too. I mean, we got a bunch of new offensive linemen coming in there playing next to each other, tight ends playing next to those offensive linemen, receivers working in all in unison. So it's just, you know, it's one cohesive unit that just is going to benefit from, you know, repetition after repetition. But, I mean, I'm definitely confident in Dirk and the system he has in place. We just got to be better up front.
It's Falcons tight end and Pro Bowler Austin Hooper with us here on Dukes and Bell on the WaitForIt.com hotline.
Ooh!
You got 4 years now, Hoop, in the NFL. So let me ask you this. A lot of people, not just here in Atlanta, but a lot of guys are saying because coaches are so wary of, you know, guys getting beat up and, you know, getting hurt, guys just don't have the continuity from the reps and the play in the preseason. We all hate preseason football. Is there any truth to that? I mean, do you guys need those reps in live fire in, like, week three of preseason?
I'm trying to – first of all, let me think if I can get in trouble for answering this question.
Just be real.
No, I'm just playing. But, I mean, obviously it depends who you are, right? I mean, like, you're Julio, a guy who's played catch with Matt Ryan for a decade. Like, you got no reason to be in preseason. Like, it don't matter for you. But, I mean, me being a younger player, like, I enjoy being out there. I mean, for sure, I don't want to be out there 70 snaps for 4 games. Like, you don't need to put all those tread on those tires before, you know, season gets going. So, I mean, I trust Malarkey. I mean, he had a great plan for me in preseason. I mean, we're all forgetting the fact, like, we're still in training camp during this time. Like, we get a bunch of reps against each other all the time. I just think, you know, preseason is a great opportunity to see, you know, the youth come in. I mean, preseason was incredibly beneficial for me my first 2 years, you know, while I was still trying to get a feel for the general, you know, concepts within the offense and really just going against different people and understanding how, you know, techniques are supposed to be played in different defenses regardless of the personnel. So it's hard for me to answer that because it's like yes and no, you know what I mean? I mean, there are definitely benefits to it, but it's a double-edged sword too because I've seen guys go down in a game that, you know, doesn't matter like a regular season game does, you know what I mean? So
yeah,
it's
yeah.
Definitely a double-edged sword. I mean, I don't have the answer for you guys. I wish I did. That's a good question, but it's also a tough question. I don't got it for you.
Right. Okay.
Bro, keep catching balls. 13 catches, 15 targets. That means he's catching everything. Hoop, good luck this weekend. We'll be watching, and we'll talk to you soon.
Thanks guys, for having me.
Yeah, man.
Thanks, Hoop. Yeah, man, because a guy that, as we said, he's kind of just a cool, loose guy, the California cool thing that was dubbed on him a few years back, and a guy that has certainly risen, you know, raised his game. It's risen to another level. We talked about, and he talked about it, you know, making more big catches and big moments, and he's doing that now. And, you know, when you've got a guy who can make the plays, Pro Bowler, boom. You got a wide receiver, okay? You got two in Calvin Ridley. We got so many weapons. This gets back to our conversation yesterday. The only area where we're, you know, looking to see a little more consistency is the run game. And can we do that against Indianapolis? Going to find out on Sunday whether it's going to be free or Rito.
All right, man. We got more to get to. Yeah, man. No man's on the way. That means the Big Eagle's about to step into the studio. It's next.
Oh, you ain't lying.
It's time for Yeah Man, No Man.
Kind of makes me wonder why the hell so many people are trying to tell me to slow down. Seems like I should be shutting the hell up and enjoying the show.
He's 6'1".
Not really.
From Florida.
Kennesaw State.
And gives rapid-fire questions. It's the executive producer of the Dukes and Bell Show, Bo Morgan.
All right, guys, he's here. His hands are up in the air as if he's a big deal.
He's got a big ego. Such a huge ego.
Yes, that's perfect.
That's about
that's
right.
That's perfect. By the way, I saw your tweet about Big Boy before we get started yesterday. I know you were pretty excited about meeting Big Boy and Sleepy Brown. That went well, huh?
Yeah, that was a great moment for me. Look, I've gotten lucky enough to meet a lot of guys and be on the team playing and be around a lot of athletes. And every once in a while, you get around somebody that you grew up listening to mm-hmm. and kind of, you know, admiring and how cool of a moment it was. And you know what? Big Boy lived up to every bit of it. Because for me, I've met some guys that, Bill Laimbeer, that kind of were jerks.
Yeah.
And it kind of made me come to a realization, you know what? I don't know if I want to meet that person because I want them to still be that cool person.
It's a good point.
And yeah. So Big Boy lived up to what you would hope someone that you've, you know, listened to and been a fan of for a long time would be.
It's cool people.
And I'm going to his party soon because he told me you were going to take me.
That is correct. It is Bo Morgan. It is Yeah Man, No Man. What you got working, bro?
All right, we got a couple of things. We got to work with some sound today. So Mike's favorite college football guy, Paul Feinbaum, has become a part of his other favorite guy, Mike Greenberg's show, Get Up. And they've got
that's a recipe for not watching.
Well, they do a good job of having a lot of people on that show. In fact, so many people are on that show that when others are talking, as you'll hear in the soundbite, there are random people talking over them.
Okay.
So Paul Feinbaum gives Eli Manning a glowing send-off and how he should get the greatest send-off ever, and he's such a great human being. Well, then they talk about Cam Newton, and he says, well, he goes in on Cam Newton, and Ryan Clark has an issue with it. Here's how it all plays out.
Okay. We're not watching the beginning of the end. It is the end. It's over for Cam Newton. I don't know why we are mincing words and trying to find a pretty way to put it. I think he's a train wreck right now. He can't do what he used to do. And quite frankly, forget the sympathy tour. Cam Newton has never really cared about anyone other than Cam Newton. And that doesn't mean he shouldn't be given the opportunity. But he's brought this franchise down. It's over for Cam Newton. Nice knowing you, but you're done.
This is my only statement to that. Right?
Yeah.
We just spoke glowingly about Paul.
Yes.
Paul. Glowingly about Eli Manning, and he has been a dud for the last 4 years. You want to talk about bringing a franchise down? Eli has ruined that franchise. So we got to take out how we feel about dudes because he's a Manning, because we love him, because he gives us this sucks, you can do whatever you want to me, and I'm going to be okay about it. That's not true. If we're looking at it right now, Cam has more left than Eli's had for years. So we got to take out how we feel about dudes and the way that they act and say that he doesn't get to have a tour or he doesn't get to have farewells. That's not how it works.
He's been successful.
The dude has killed himself for his team.
So if you don't know, that's Dominique Foxworth, one-time Falcon. He was the president of the NFLPA for a long time before Eric Winston took it over. Once Foxworth was out of the league, he is on that show as well and in ESPN everywhere.
Get him!
He was doing to get him. He was the guy talking over Ryan Clark, who went at Paul Feinbaum.
Right.
And you know what? You guys can comment on it, but the question would be, yeah, man, no, man, is Cam Newton done?
Well, I mean, real quick, I mean, I do think that Foxworth kind of overreacted, although Feinbaum makes him so easy to not like with those comments because, you know, Eli has won two Super Bowls, Cam has not. Eli's got 56,000 yards. He's going to the Hall of Fame. And Cam, we're worried about his future with his arm and everything else breaking down. So just purely about the numbers, Carl, you could back up what Feinbaum's saying. But this is the same Feinbaum who called Hank Aaron and Uncle Tom for his relationship with Bud Selig years ago.
I'm sorry?
Yeah. You know how I feel about this guy. I mean, he's the master of the obvious, and he's bankrolled it into a great career because there's a lot of morons out there that lap it up. But I still think you got to let the guy say his piece. I mean, that sounded a bit crazy. Get him! I mean, come on, guys. Let's have a little discourse. Say your piece without sounding like it's going in a really strange direction.
Cam's not done. Is Cam ever going to relive the 2015 MVP season that he had, where he accounted for 45 touchdowns, 35 throwing, 10 running? No. That's the Cam that I think people are expecting to see. Does that mean that Cam still can't play at a high level? The question is, I told you this, Bo, we were talking about this. He was so inaccurate in that game the other night when they played the Buccaneers. And again, people look at numbers. They wake up the next day and they go, well, dude threw for 300 yards. He was throwing, underthrowing intermediate passes, overthrowing short passes, and overthrowing long and deep passes. The accuracy, for whatever reason, is not there. And now, I don't know if it's an excuse or not, but they're using this ankle thing to say, well, he's not completely healthy. This is something he hurt in the preseason. Mm. I think it's still the arm issue. And I think they're using the ankle thing as an excuse. With all of that said, I'm not going to count this brother out simply because I know how talented he is. It's way too early, and he's still way too young. And I'm going to be honest with you. Cam is still playing for a big contract.
Well, that gets back to our conversation yesterday, Carl. I mean, he's done it after 2020. He's an unrestricted free agent in 2021. If he does not improve physically, if the accuracy, if the completion percentage doesn't come back up, first off, Ron Rivera is so gone, it's not even funny. So you'll have a new regime. You got a new owner. Where do you see? He's going to have to get it together. And this looks like a lost year already. I know 2 weeks is a small sample size, but you just touched on it. Cam doesn't look remotely like the MVP player of 2014.
So I think for me, if I was to be, we're talking about Cam Newton, not if he's done, but is he done as a Carolina Panther? Because that, to me, is the bigger thing when you start talking about Cam and where he's going to be maybe a year or so from now.
Like a second act somewhere else?
Maybe.
Because we all know what he's capable of, but a blind man could see it right now. He just can't do the things. Remember the game the other night against the Bucks? That would be Cam Newton with the football with the game on the line. Not Cam as a decoy flanked off to the right.
Yeah, with the game on the line, you're right.
All right, so Michael Vick, and he was on this interview, and he was talking about the first time he went to eat with Arthur Blank. So Arthur had just bought the team. Vic is still young. And what he ordered might really shock you.
So my rookie year, I wasn't too fond of going out to eat, maybe like a Ruby Tuesdays or a Friday. So I'm used to a different type of menu, coming out of college. Arthur, he invited me out to dinner. So I'm thinking, okay, it's my first time going out to dinner with, the guy who just bought the team. It's the big time, money man, Home Depot. And I'm like, I'm really not ready for this, but, I'm going to go, being the quarterback of the team. So we get to the restaurant, Stony River, out in Alpharetta. I'll never forget. We go and I'm looking at this fancy menu and everything looked like Chinese language to me. And I'm like, man, look, I'm used to seeing a certain type of menu, not, a menu of, this magnitude where, it's filet mignon and porterhouse steaks, and I don't even know anything about that. I barely knew what the word entree meant. So, I'm looking at the menu, and I'm like, what do I order? Without embarrassing myself or without ordering something that might cost way too much. So I'm looking at the menu. I remember the most simplest thing, man. I bought chicken tenders and french fries. And fresh out of college, man, that's the best I could do. Mr. Blank looking at me like, are you serious? I'm like, yeah, because I'm not going to foot this bill.
Great. I love it.
That's gold.
I love it. Mike Vick, man, that's hilarious. And can you imagine that? Here Arthur Blank is, making millions and billions of dollar deals on a daily basis for the most part. And he's sitting down with his new franchise quarterback. How do you like your steak? I'm going to have chicken fingers.
Chicken tenders and fries. Look at basically off the kids menu.
Oh, man, that's hilarious. What's your question, bro?
Well, I was going to ask, Yamanomi, you've ever ordered chicken fingers at a nice restaurant?
That's a negative.
I know Mike has it.
No, man. If I go to a nice place, right. I'm having what I went there for.
Well,
Carl and I were in Vegas at my buddy Chris from West Virginia, and he's a big help. We were at Smith & Wolenska's, and he ordered, like, the grilled chicken. I'm like, that's it. You know what? Not on my table.
Can't do it, pal. Can't do it, man. That's what you go for. It's like going to a seafood place and ordering a burger.
Exactly.
Can't do it.
Come on.
Well, Popeye's made all this fuss, right, with their chicken sandwich. Well, KFC is going to get into it. But theirs is going to have a little bit different twist. Not going to be spicy.
Saw that.
It's going to be a donut sandwich. A donut chicken sandwich. So the buns will be two glazed donuts, and you'll have one nice crispy piece of chicken in the middle of it.
Now, I've seen the Sublime Burger, and they used to do the Luther Burger over in Decatur, which was the burger with the two donuts for the buns.
Why did they call it the Luther Burger?
Because Luther Vandross used to eat it.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, that was Luther's thing.
Oh.
And he ate too many of them. That's why he's up in heaven.
I was going to say,
you got to moderate that intake of
love
donuts.
Love you, Luther!
Yeah, you got to moderate your intake of donuts and two patties of meat with a lot of biscuits.
This house is not a home.
Mike, did you just say the word moderation?
Moderation.
Moderation.
Not for me, but for Luther. I mean, I'm still learning about moderation. But anyway, I saw that two like glazed donuts with a piece of chicken tender, like a chicken fillet in the middle. I'm not impressed. And I love KFC, but that looks disgusting. But if you like waffles and chicken, Carl, would you vibe on that?
Yeah, listen, and I do like waffles and chicken. Chicken and waffles. Roscoe's. Wish we had one here. Anyways, there are some great chicken and waffle spots. I would dig that.
I think we should do another blind taste test.
You, what do you want to taste it with is the question. It has to go against something else.
Some chicken and waffles. Who knows? I don't care.
Right, so now we're going to do the best chicken and waffles?
You know what? Hey, I'm down with that. I do enjoy a good chicken and waffle.
Yeah, me and Mike want to do another test, Carl.
So you want me to roll around town and pick up chicken and waffles for everybody?
Carl, I need you to spend 30 miles in the car next week to go get the chicken and waffles.
You can leave early one day. Mm-hmm.
Here's what we do. You know what? We go to these chicken and waffle spots, and we film it, and we put it out there. That's what we do.
Okay. You buy it?
Yes, Bo. I would buy it. Okay.
Craig, hit the music.
What's up, Luther? This man was talented.
And by the way, you can get a Sublime Burger at Cypress Midtown. They got the burger with the two donuts for the buns.
Okay. Hey, man. That's Yeah Man, No Man. Coming up, Falcon Report. It's Dukes and Bell. On the way, Dan Quinn. You'll hear what he had to say today. Lots more in store, man. It's Dukes and Bell.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance, too, with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.